The line between officially sanctioned acts and actual piracy was always a fine one. Were you legitimate when Queen Elizabeth I of England sanctioned your voyage as she did Sir Francis Drake and then took a share of the loot brought home? Legal or not, piracy proved to be a very lucrative business indeed. Historian Randall Robert Lee has estimated that the typical privateer risks a mere 390 British pounds in a pirate action, while the net return was often several times that amount. For instance, merchant mariner cum English pirate Robert Raniger more than doubled his personal wealth in a single pirate action, the capture of a Spanish treasure ship in 1545, which netted him personally some 4,000 British pounds. The result? Naval historian Michael Oppenheim noted that all classes of English society were speculating in privateering on a large or small scale. Similarly, historian Philip Goss concluded that during the reign of English Queen Elizabeth I from 1558 to 1603, the regularity with which the plundered prizes were brought in made the business of piracy and privateering extremely profitable. If generous cost-sharing agreements with privateers promoted substantial expansion of the English Navy with virtually no cost to the English Crown, then the letters of marque set down specific rules for pirates and privateers to follow. For instance, the 1544 agreement for the voyage of the English privateer ship Martin Bulley included the typical and explicit passage invoking the ship's crew to, quote, plunder the king's enemies, laying out a specific share agreement for ship owner, captain, crew members, and the English crown, to whom was generally allotted an average of 10 to 15% of the value of the plunder in the form of fees, of 10% paid to the Lord Admiral, as well as customs duties averaging 5%. Similarly, Captain Kidd's privateering commission more than a century later strictly forbade him from attacking vessels of England's allies, but encouraged him to ruthlessly harass the ships and ports controlled by England's enemies. Because the profits to be made were so large, European governments so weak to enforce their wills on the margins of the new global economy, and greed and corruption so rampant during this period, it was very difficult to control the situation. Actions that were condoned by one nation were often looked on as illegal by another. Often missed among adventure stories of pirates is the fact that most were Protestants sponsored by governments in England or the Netherlands against Spanish or Portuguese Catholic shipping. Sir Francis Drake and Sir Henry Morgan both sailed when governments sanctioned acts of piracy, and both sailed for England, and more frequently than not, benefited economically and politically from such acts. By the time of Captain Kidd at the end of the 17th century, there were three main rivals for domination of the seas: Catholic Spain, Catholic France, and Protestant England, with the Dutch Netherlands playing a smaller Protestant role. Stereotypes reflected these overlaps. A 17th century English Protestant sailor, for instance, referred to all Portuguese, a nation of Catholics, as, quote, a nation of lying, thieving, swearing, lusty hypocrites. What was the precise relationship between pirates and their governments? Historian John Weston explained it best. Why did the English authorities seem to encourage the activities of the buccaneers or pirates? The answer lies in the fact that people in power in London knew that Britain's future prosperity rested on her ability to expand trading markets. The Spanish had claimed the New World, and Spain had become dependent upon the gold and silver it produced. They sought to control trade and limit it exclusively to Spanish merchants and Spanish ships. At the time in question, in the mid-1600s, it was not unknown for the Spaniards to capture British ships in the West Indies and to enslave their crews. The Spanish Armada had sailed to attack England only 70 or so years before, and the perceived threat from Spanish Catholicism was probably greater than the more recent 20th century concerns about Eastern European communism. England had no colonies where slaves toiled in gold mines and knew that only the outposts of the enfeebled Spanish Empire prevented British merchants from exploiting new opportunities for trade. Simply put, England understood that the Spanish Empire was simply too large to defend effectively, and the English privateers were therefore encouraged to seize every opportunity to harass Spanish shipping and to attack and pillage Spanish outposts with the express guarantee of impunity before English law.